Josh is playing us some music.
Yay. Do you like it?
No.
Okay. Is it Josh May's music, or is it just music Josh is playing?
Just Josh playing music.
Oh. Well, alright then.
Play this music, isn't it?
Pardon?
Look, bitch!
I've played plenty of music while in here. It's just, it's all random and extemporaneous and not technically music.
Actually, to be fair, Josh has sent us more music than we've heard.
That's true.
What do you mean he sent us more music?
He sent us at least two or three songs.
No. Oh. I didn't know he made those.
It's my SoundCloud of music I've stolen from other people on the internet.
As you were wont to do.
I'm being abused by my students.
Oh, so it's just sort of like opposites day then.
I will kill you. I will destroy you. You will perish in flames.
Opposites Friday.
Frank, where have you been? I've been worried.
Had a rough work week, and then I had a couldn't sleep week, and then here I am. Sleep is very important.
I know this.
And a couple of days of not being able to get to sleep till 5 or 6 in the morning, that's all, you can do it, sure. But when it goes on for like a week, it becomes cumulative and you just become stupid. Or at least I do. Stupider.
Fighting urge to say something mean.
That's why I preempted you and said stupider. But, I think I've become dependent on lip balm.
That happens.
Because now,
across our country.
Now, when I don't have lip balm on, my lips feel weird.
You know what? I'm going to share a secret, and I have the same problem.
Yeah.
At night, before I go to bed, my lips get real dry for some reason, and so I have to put chapstick on before I go to sleep.
I don't know if it's just like a relative thing, because, it's not like my lips are cracking or chapped looking or anything like that. They just feel really dry. And I don't feel like I'm dehydrated. It just feels dry without the lip balm.
That's what I just assumed, is that I was dehydrated.
I drink a lot of water, so I can't imagine I'm dehydrated. But who knows? All I know is I go through a whole lot of lip balm, dude.
Well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
A lot of lip balm. I don't know when the last time I bought one.
Oh, yeah, I go through probably at least a couple of sticks a year.
That's not a whole,
Yep. Yeah. Anyway. It's a, what do you want to call it? First world problem, I guess.
It definitely is.
So anyway, starting off on that note. Also, apparently things you're allergic to and the way your body reacts to stuff can change as you age.
Yeah, absolutely.
For instance,
I never used to have allergies. How's that?
Well, yeah, exactly. When I moved to Chicago, I never had allergy problems. When I moved back to Ohio, I've pretty much had a runny nose since I've moved back to Ohio.
That's another reason you should come back here?
Possibly. But, when I was a little kid, I was stung a handful of times by bees and stuff. And it hurt because, something's poking into you and you got a stinger there. But it wasn't like that big a deal. Pull the stinger out and it was fine in like an hour or something. I remember, this actually happened in the late 90s. I got stung on my hand because I went to go reach for a beer and there was one of those little bees on the top of the beer that like to hang around soda drinks and stuff.
Okay.
And I didn't see it until I hit, grabbed the beer and it stung me on my hand. And I was like, oh, didn't think anything of it. Pulled a stinger out, you know. And then I was subbing in for a band I was hanging around with. Like, one of their members was sick, so I was playing with them that night. And by the end of the night, it hurt like hell, and I started to see swelling and stuff, you know. By the next morning, from my fingertips to my shoulder, my arm looked like a giant blood sausage, you know. It was scary looking, man, like some sort of alien. Like, okay, you know when in Battle Beyond the Stars, when that dude sews the alien arm onto him?
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. I don't remember that.
I think that was Battle Beyond the Stars. That was the one with John Boy, right?
John Boy.
Yeah.
I think that's his official name.
Well, you know what I'm saying. They're all quiet on the Western
Front. I'm sure he answers to it.
Oh, sure. I'm sure he's probably heard more than once as he was leaving a party. Good night, John Boy. But yeah, anyway, that was terrible. And, like, I couldn't figure out. I was like, well, gee, I guess something happened. I'm allergic to bees now, you know? But leading up to that, this week, I don't know. Either I'm getting hit by some sort of mutant strain of mosquito, or something's happened where my body just really doesn't like getting bit by mosquitoes anymore. Because I have gotten some like horrendous bug bites this past week. One of them was, like, dude, the area around the bite itself, the, whatever you want to call it, I guess the injection site or whatever, like, you know, got around the size, a little bit bigger than a quarter. But then around that, like, another probably, you know, inch radius around it, the skin turned into a giant bruise.
Yeah. Giving this really big bruises after mosquito bites.
It's weird. That never happened to me before. And then I went to go, after that happened, that was on my leg, and I went to take some antihistamine just to try to kind of curb the reaction a little bit. And I had specifically been taking this particular brand of antihistamine because it didn't make me all crazy, like loopy, tired and stuff. And I took a couple of those, and like within an hour, man, I was zonked. I was just, bleh, you know? So I'm like, I have no idea what's going on, but...
I've never had that reaction to antihistamine that everybody does.
It varies from person to person, and some antihistamines would hit me worse than others. And I finally, you know, stumbled across one that didn't do that to me, and so that's why I kept them around. But something changed. So, I don't know, man. It's just, bodies are weird. Intelligent design my ass.
I don't think you understand.
Say, contest. I mean, intelligently designed the crank's ass.
Yeah.
That's new.
It just works in reverse sense, because you've also said that...
Me?
Yeah, you've also said that certain medicines that normally make people really drowsy and groggy make you jittery. So...
You mean Zoloft? Yeah, Zoloft did it. But then I think that's not uncommon if you just started it, right?
They usually say no. They usually say it makes you lethargic.
Did not make me lethargic. Maybe there was something else making me jittery.
I've read that antihistamines can make some people jittery, too. Like, some people it makes them sleepy, and some people it makes them jittery.
And it depends for me. Like, just regular antihistamines are, they make me tired, like, they'll knock me out. But, like, the 24-hour variety, like, the Claritin or whatever, like, those just get me up.
I mean, also, I can drink, several sodas before I go to bed and sleep fine.
Oh, that's...
Caffeine doesn't really do it to me.
Do you still drink a lot of caffeine normally, though?
Yes.
Probably have. Yeah, I mean, that's like a built-up tolerance kind of thing, probably.
Probably.
Because I used to be like that, and then...
I don't drink as much soda as I used to, but I do drink a lot of, like, coffee.
Right. Yeah, I used to have a really high tolerance for caffeine, and then, you know, I stopped drinking it for a long time, and now when I have it... It actually hits me like it's supposed to, I guess. And I can't drink it. I mean, if I drink it too late in the evening, it'll keep me up and stuff now. Where it, you know, I'd finish off a 2-liter before bed. Not drink the whole 2-liter, but you know, a 2 liter I'd been drinking for a while that day. I'd finish that off before I'd go to sleep and it wouldn't bother me.
Well, I've been having a lot of, like, blood sugar issues this week, too, so maybe my weird body chemistry is something I should have been doing.
Could be.
I mean, it's weird.
Say what?
Check everybody's blood sugar to see if I'm normal.
You're going to check everybody's blood sugar?
I'm going to check Josh's. Josh's seems like he'd be the one that would test.
Wait, do you have to, like, prick his finger to do that?
Does seem like cowards. Wait a minute. I'm not going to prick him with my little... I got to get something...
Isn't that like sharing needles?
Yeah, I don't want to do that to him.
Let's just get a pot. Disposable lancets.
Yeah, I don't replace it every time. There's my lancets.
Wow, okay. This show just got weird really fast.
Yeah, we're going to get crazy. Woo!
We're talking
lancets!
We're talking drawing blood on the show and stuff. Why aren't we videoing this?
Like the Kiss comic book.
Yeah, okay. There's a little bit of blood in every episode? That should be the Crankcast new motto. If we're not drawing blood, we're not doing it right. Just keep pricking them until it comes.
It's not doing anything.
I don't bleed very well.
Man, that's nice.
What's the opposite of hemophiliac?
Josh ain't got time to bleed.
So my blood's hurt.
Wow, it's not going through.
Josh is hemo-hesitant.
Hemo-hesitant.
Not another finger. You a talented?
Oh, that may be it, actually.
It's all that Fast and Furious keyboard typing.
Are you feeling it?
Oh, wait, here we go.
Right. Oh, wow.
Now it just starts bleeding uncontrollably.
It did. It just started.
It's a gusher.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
104.
Huh. Is that high?
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, that's what...
No, you're already dead.
I think general, like, having not eaten... Like, that makes sense. You just ate something or had something with sugar?
I had, like, caffeine, yeah.
Okay. It had sugar in it?
Well, I had a donut this morning.
Okay, so that makes sense. I think normal resting, like, without having eaten, like, normal humans between, like...
Did you say without having eaten normal humans?
80 to 90-something.
I got superior sugar.
Yeah. Like, 104 lately has been my, like, not having
eaten. Your anger
zone? No, it's, like, my not having eaten.
Wait, what is it?
Like, 104.
So that's your resting shook face?
Resting. Let's see what mine is. 104. This is going to maybe make me feel better or worse.
You switched your lancet, right?
Oh, no. Oops.
Did you not?
No, I forgot.
We're blood brothers now.
See, mine's 131.
Wow.
Fuck.
Well, now that you and Josh share a blood bond, maybe it'll even out.
I need to go walk around the block.
Or rock around the block.
The thing. Yeah, so, right, that was real dumb. I changed the lancet and then I forgot to change it again.
Well, that's actually, so you should probably subtract 104 from what you got. So, you're actually dead. Yeah.
Maybe you could just split the difference?
Shut up.
Oh, and here we are. Mike's practicing bad blood hygiene.
How much
water? I've been drinking a lot more this week. The thing about it is, I have a natural, like, I can tell when I'm high or when I'm low. And when it's high, it manifests in, like, me feeling very sleepy, like, flushed in the face, although I don't look flushed, it feels like that when you're flushed. And, like, generally just tired. Kind of like after you have a big dinner, you know? Except it's, like, way heavier for me.
Do you get the meat sweats?
But I don't feel that right now. So there's something off.
Are you sure your machine's not reading stuff high? Did it get? Can you recalibrate it?
Yeah, I forgot how to do that. I don't think it's reading high.
Did you get new strips?
Yes, these are new strips.
Yes, that could be it, actually. Because each pack of strips has their own calibration.
138, so I've gone up since.
Since 3 minutes ago?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
See, this isn't normal.
I think so normally when you get a new can of strips, you have to enter in, like, the serial number on there on your tester.
Not
to calibrate the tester to the strips. Or scan it.
Yeah, if the results don't seem right, I'd probably first turn to calibration issues. Especially if you're not actually feeling something that seems like it should be going on.
Anyway, it's been a rough week.
Yeah? For you too? Yeah.
Just for that.
Oh. Well, don't die.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want to.
Well, that's good. It all starts with the will to live.
Shut up.
Let's see. Calibrate. Contour. Next. Easy.
Calibrate. Don't hesitate.
You're legal by diet.
Exercise. No, I have medicine that I do. So that's why it's unusual that this is happening. What else is going on while I read this?
Well, I've got something for you to watch that'll both raise your blood sugar level and cause your will to live to possibly sink.
It's
one of Olivia Newton-John's first movies, and it was a Don Kirshner thing called Tomorrow from 1970. And it's sort of like I think they were trying to recreate a Monkees type vibe or something. But it's slightly more risque than the Monkees.
Oh, I like it.
And it's
Say Monkees.
I guess it was an English. Half the cast seems like they're Australians, so I don't know. But I think it was an English made thing, and it was 1970, it was called Tomorrow, it was about a band that gets discovered by a group of aliens that are monitoring the Earth for, like, evolutionary progress and aren't finding any until they find this band. Because one of the members of the band created this, I can't remember what they called it, some sort of noise box. But it's basically just a synthesizer. And it's like their big omni-sound machine, which I guess takes the place of the bass player and everything, because there's bass in the songs, but there's not a bass player in the band.
Bill and Ted, the future was aliens.
Pardon?
It's like Bill and Ted, the future was aliens.
Kinda, yeah. So the aliens are having a problem because somehow their music, which is something that sustains them, is no longer sustaining them, so they're looking for new forms of electronic music. And they turn to this band to come to their planet and teach them the ways of this pop electronic music so that they can live. But, of course, the people don't want to go there, so they wind up kidnapping them. But, you know. And it's pretty goofy. It's a pretty goofy movie. A label called Real Gone is re-releasing the soundtrack on vinyl. Which is how I heard about it, because I'd never heard of this movie before. And you can find the full movie on YouTube currently.
What's it called?
Tomorrow, spelled with T-O-O, Morrow. Like, and one of the band's theme songs says something about where do you, or if you ask me where I live, I'll say tomorrow. You know. I don't know. It's that weird time period that's in between, like, 70s pop and 60s hippie stuff.
That's a crazy movie poster.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, like I said, it's goofy. It's not a terrible, terrible movie. I've seen much, much worse. I've seen much worse movies with better production values, for that matter. And the music's like, I mean, it's Milquetoast. Think like Partridge Family, you know?
How dare.
I'm just using them as an example, because the Monkees actually had good music, and the Partridge Family had a couple of good songs, but by and large, like, the music on their episodes was bland, boring.
How dare.
Or, you know, think of, like, any of the songs on a Brady Bunch. The two or three that they did.
How dare you!
But, you know, it's, like, super young Olivia Newton-John, and she's all, you know, bright and chipper. They really should have used her more on the songs, I think, because she doesn't get much play, but... And there you go. Tomorrow! 1970. Oh, and apparently Kirshner thought it was so bad that by the end of the production he wrote his name off of it. And from what I read an anecdote that said he vowed that if he had his way, it would never be shown again in his lifetime.
Hmm.
And while it did get a 1980 release in Japan, it was never released in the U.S. until 2014 on DVD, which was like 2 years after Kirshner died. So, maybe he did get his way, more or less. And, scene. I've been reading some weird stuff lately.
You don't say!
I do say. So, back when I was reading a bunch of stuff about Saul Bass, I had heard about somebody that he considered, an inspiration or whatever, a guy from the Bauhaus school,
mm-hmm.
whose name was, I'm gonna mess his name up because I haven't heard it spoken out loud, but I tried to read I was reading several books about the guy previous to this book I'm reading now, and in one of them they tried to explain how to say his name because he was like Hungarian or something like that, so it doesn't look like you would say it phonetically in English,
mm-hmm.
but his name was Laszlo Mihaly Nagy. Nagy? N-A-G-Y. And I guess also from what I read, he mostly just went by Mihaly, because that was easiest to say, I guess.
Okay.
So he was one of the teachers at the Bauhaus School, really influential, authored or co-authored like one of their big books that was called The New Vision back in like 1928 or something like that. Did a lot of experiments in what they called light modulators, which were sort of 3D sculptures that would use light and shapes to create images. Well, yeah, images, I guess. But in a moving fashion and stuff, too. And he did a lot of experimental, like, photography work for the time, especially. It was kind of out there. One of the early adopters of the photogram, where you don't actually use a camera. You just take photographic paper and place objects on it.
Okay.
And then, you know, that records the interaction of shape and light. And, Man Ray was another big one with the photograms, except he called them rayographs, I think. So anyway, yeah, during the war, the Bauhaus had to relocate because, you know, I guess they were having problems operating in Germany. And, eventually, Mihaly wound up in the U.S., and then he had he was either a founder or the leading director for a long time, or maybe both, of a school in Chicago called the Chicago Institute of Design.
Okay.
And just before his death, he died in like 46 or 47, and just before his death he completed what I guess amounted to a culmination of his studies and philosophies on art into a book called Vision in Motion, which was then published posthumously the next year. So I've read a bunch of books about the guy's work and stuff like that, because I got curious about him. And he seemed like, you know, I mean, the stuff he was doing, especially for the time period, was really interesting. So I was like, well, okay, I'm going to read this last culmination work of his. You know, to see what this thing's all about. And, man, it's a weird book, dude. It starts out kind of like a socialist manifesto.
Mm.
And then I'm only about 100 pages into it. It's a 300-and-something page book. So it gets into different techniques of stuff, but mostly it's just talking about how the Chicago Institute of Design teaches their students, as opposed mm-hmm. to being focused strictly on the media, I guess. And it keeps, again, and it still it keeps reading like a socialist manifesto, because from what I'm gathering from this, and some of it I'm not quite understanding, and I think that's just because I don't have a lot of formal training or background that lets me interpret this correctly, you know? But essentially he was saying that kind of art integrates with everything, because it's our method of expressing our interpretation of the social medium around us. And I'm paraphrasing and probably not saying that quite right, but essentially everybody can be an artist. It's one of the sort of philosophies. It's not just some sort of specialized, rarefied field or anything. Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, it's healthy for everybody to be an artist, because that gives them an outlet of expression that doesn't involve psychosis or, you know, antisocial behavior, etc. Mm. And it's weird because, I mean, there's, again, this, you know, this book was written in the mid-40s, but there are a lot of things that I can see as being pertinent to now, even, from a social-political aspect, I guess. Things that were, he considered wrong then that still aren't fixed now, kind of stuff.
Why?
Well, again, just the fact that, you know, not being able to express yourself through art because, you know, art's been considered a field of outsiders or a field of people that, you know, are different from the normal people has led to more people having mental problems and more people acting out in physical ways that are negative, you know? Another thing was, you know, he definitely had a grind on for the capitalism run amok.
Mm.
Not that he was against capitalism specifically as a thing, but the fact that everything was being geared towards profit versus actual sustainability or the betterment of society as a whole. It's a lot for me to take in, so I don't know if I'm actually understanding a lot of this right or if I'm repeating it right.
Yeah, it sounds. I can't believe you read this for fun.
Well, I didn't know what it was going to be going into it, because while I'd read references to the book, I hadn't quite realized that it was as much of a lesson in cultural stuff as it was just sort of an art book or a design book or something, you know. But I mean, again, that makes sense though, because for him, the art was culture, art was part of life, so it's all integrated.
Mm-hmm.
It did touch on, like I've talked before, how there's some art I don't understand, and I think partly it's because I don't have the vocabulary for it. And it there is a bit that touches on that where he talks about, like, you know, talks about what was then the new art. And how it a lot of people perceive it as being unintelligible or illegible. But that's usually due to a lack of education about what the art means. And I can see that. Like, there's things that I've looked at. Like, take Cubism, for example.
I don't know about that, because I don't like that excuse that if you don't understand something, you're stupid, is what he's saying.
Well, he's not saying you're stupid. He's saying you don't know. Essentially, he's just saying you're not educated about it. You don't have the information to process it. It's not being stupid. It's not saying that you can't process it. It's like, essentially he's saying, it's like if you've never heard Chinese before and you try to listen to a Chinese conversation, and I'm making this example up, but that's sort of analogous to what he's saying. Trying to interpret a foreign language without actually having ever learned it, you know? Because, like, there's things like, again, take Cubism. There are certain Cubist works that, like, some of them I get. Like, I can see, okay, this is this and this and this, and I understand what they're trying to do, and that makes sense. Okay. Some of it I don't understand at all, and I just don't get it. I'm like, what? And then some of it falls in between where I don't really understand it, but I like the balance of shapes and colors. So, like, I like it. I don't necessarily understand it, but I like it. Yeah, I mean, there's things that could be aesthetically pleasing to you without you even getting what the hell they are. And I mean, we've all seen for a fact the way people interpret stuff, interpret stories, interpret art, whatever, that sometimes what they think they're getting is completely opposite of what the artist intended to begin with. And who's right there, you know, is art subjective or objective? Like, when it comes to meaning, you know, is the artist supreme when they're saying this means this thing?
I am the artist supreme.
Exactly. But anyway, it's just interesting because I'm kind of trying to think a little different. Which is also part of what they said the curriculum in that school was like the first sessions in that, like the first lessons they would teach students were to kind of break down the barriers instilled by what they had already learned, but were blocking them from understanding this other stuff.
Oh, that's Jedi training.
And then the whole thing, and because it is a, you know, it's a design school, so the whole goal was to, they kind of wrap everything into architecture, which I'd never really thought about as a thing before, like architecture being the basis of other arts.
Good thing, though.
They kind of wrap it all into architecture, and then I guess eventually the curriculum focused them on designing for purpose instead of just fun.
Purpose.
Just things like, you know, they were really big on what were new materials at the time, like fiberboard, or plywood, sorry. I guess plywood was new in 1946.
Makes sense.
And plastics, of course, like the acrylics and plastics and stuff like that.
Plastics, yes.
They were able to structurally make new things like chairs that only had two legs as opposed to four, or new kinds of joins instead of like your typical, you know, dovetail type stuff or whatever.
It's plywood's strong in both directions versus...
Right, yeah, new ways of, and new ways of joining materials to, like, structurally make them stronger and lighter at the same time. Just, you know, so they have this sort of a, it's kind of like a holistic thing where it's just this all-encompassing, everything interacts with everything else kind of approach. The Dirk Gently School of Design, I guess, you know? Again, it's interesting, and some of it I'm just not processing very well, I think.
I think you're processing fine.
I don't know. It's hard to say, again, because I don't have a lot of the formal background to refer to anything else to say, does this make sense to me on anything other than its own merits, you know? So, but if you're looking for a weird read about art as culture, I definitely recommend it. It's called Vision in Motion. And it's...
Sparkle Motion.
Laszlo Mihaly Nagy.
Laszlo Mihaly?
I think... And
he lives in the closet. He lives in the closet, dude.
Who? I don't know what you're talking about.
He won all of the Frito-Lay prizes.
Okay. Is this that song from the mid-2000s?
No, this is Real Genius, starring Val Kilmer.
Oh, that guy.
Laszlo Hollyfell.
You know, they might have actually been making a play on that guy's name or something.
I think Laszlo is just a funny name. That's why they did it.
And
sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah, you know, unless you're sucking on it like a cock or something. too far?
No.
Sorry. Oh, I also want to touch back on that book that I was reading last time we talked, that Graphic Design Solutions book.
I have some solutions for graphic design.
Right. It's actually an educational book. And I read through it, and it was a good refresher for a lot of stuff, because, again, sometimes when you've been doing something long enough, you forget why you do it anymore. You just do it intuitively. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice to touch back on some stuff and realize, okay, yeah, this is why I do this when I'm working on something. And I think I would recommend finding an updated version of it, because this was a third edition, but it was from like 2006. So some of the topics in there, I'm sure, have been updated, because they talk about like web design and stuff, and come on, 2006 web design. You know?
That's when you were doing web design.
I know, that's the joke. Work with me here, Mike.
It's going down.
You're going down.
It's because you combined your blood with Johnson's.
It's death. Why are more people doing this?
Doing what?
Nothing.
Giving themselves
a job. Go ahead with your boring lectures. Yep, go on with your boring art lectures. This is why I'm not in school anymore. Also because I graduated. But.
Well, in art school, did they teach you about Mahalie Nagy?
Probably. I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering. Anyway, all I'm going to say is that it's got a lot of stuff in it.
I cheated on my ancient medieval architecture paper. I'm sorry.
Is this a plot from a TV show?
No, I did.
Oh.
But nobody did it because it was fucking impossible.
How is it impossible?
Look.
Was it the Kobayashi Maru of architecture?
Yes, at the University of Memphis, art students could opt out of higher math by taking this class called Ancient Medieval Architecture, in which you had to find and write out the formulas for creating an ancient pyramid, a Gothic cathedral, and I forgot what else.
So they let you opt out of higher math to take a class that needed higher math.
Yes, that is the thing. So you had a bunch of kids who thought they got out of math having to take this class, which was impenetrable, especially if you were a dumbass that couldn't do higher math.
Right.
So everybody, cheated.
Well, I guess at least you were in company.
And guess what? I've never built a pyramid to this day.
It's because you're dumb and don't know higher math. So wait, does that mean ancient peoples had higher math?
Huh?
I said,
well, yeah.
I mean...
So the ancient peoples invented higher math.
So, like, people, like, 500 and thousands of years ago were smarter than you?
It depends on the definition of smart. But almost certainly, yes.
My cat is probably smarter than me. What are you talking about? How many times in our recorded conversations, I'm sure some crazy person that listens to this show can tell you how many times I've told you I am stupid...
582.
He's been keeping it on his desktop.
Oh, no.
The only thing that makes him feel better.
Sorry. 583 with today.
Okay, thank you.
No, I understand. I was never good at math myself.
Here's the thing. When people say that, I feel like you're not understanding the scope. It's almost as if I look at a piece of paper and it has numbers on it and I react the same way someone sees Jason in the forest coming after them.
I have a milder reaction. I just tend to get dyslexic when I see strings of numbers.
Well, no, that's part of it. Yeah.
I get dyslexic and I want to go to sleep.
I mean, you could, it kind of translates to you know, word problems too, like train is moving, this, you know?
That's still math problems.
Yeah, but even further into even riddles and stuff. Like, I feel like I understand it, but I don't. That's why I would be bad in a
Sphinx scenario.
Capacity.
You could never answer how a raven's like a writing desk.
If you wanted me to knock the door down.
Yeah, I was gonna say
I might be able to help.
I could just run through the wall.
I can run through, yeah. I could and then you'd get kicked out and never be allowed to come back to the escape room. But yeah, trying to
feel like...
I'm not the clue, which sucks because I love those kind of games, right?
Yeah.
I'm just terrible at them.
But Guess Destroys Escape Room has to be like a real comedy expense for escape room.
That's right? True. That's true. Like, somebody trashed the fucking escape room again.
They got a line item for that somewhere.
I don't know where he got the sledgehammer, but he found the sledgehammer.
Who forgot to frisk him going in?
Yeah, how did he sneak that in?
He was wearing JNCOs.
JNCOs. That's your first red flag. If somebody's wearing JNCOs, they're smuggling something.
Yeah, eventually you see a sign that's got, like, you know, a pair of JNCOs with a Buster sign over them.
Yeah, Buster sign over the Fagos. I mean, the
Fagos, too, yeah.
Yeah, don't bring the Fagos, either.
No JNCO, no Fago.
You know, Fago tasted weird to me.
I don't remember Fago as a specific thing. I remember it tasting like generic soda whenever I had it. That's all.
Yeah, it tasted like it was missing something.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Somebody do a study to see, like, the amount of
ICP?
Of Juggalos that are diabetic.
All of them. Every single one, Mike.
Well, you know, you might not be wrong.
Including ICP themselves.
Definitely ICP.
Diabetes.
Diabetic.
How's it work?
Yeah, they're like, blood sugar? What the fuck is that? I've tasted my blood. It don't taste sweet.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, can I get back to my boring art lecture?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to wrap it up to say, find a newer edition. I think the latest edition of this book is 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be useful to you if you are thinking about getting into design work, or if you're, like, pretty fresh at it. It'll actually be useful to you because it's got, like, exercises in it and stuff. And if you can find it cheap, just pick it up if you want a refresher, because it's an interesting read. So that was by Robin Landa, Graphic Design Solutions. Okay, boring art lecture done. Oh, except to say that there also was a bit in that Mahaly book where he kind of knocks on comic books.
Really?
Yeah. Which, for somebody that's coming at this as being a cultural people thing, seems...
That was a new thing for him, though.
Seems a little narrow-minded.
Yeah. I mean, when did that book come out? That comics would have been a new thing, right?
Well, I mean, comics have been around since, what, mainstream 30s?
Yeah, comic books.
Right. And this was, like, 46 was when it was published, I think, 46 or 47.
So it's barely been around for, like, a decade.
And he doesn't straight up say it's an invalid art form or anything. He just says it's for children and adults of a more primitive nature.
Yeah, that was some fucking old man yelling at cloud shit.
Which I don't know. Actually, maybe 40s comics were strictly for, like, adults of a primitive nature and children.
I mean...
I haven't read a lot of 40s comics, to be honest.
I mean, they weren't made for adults, so.
Was the McDuck books around back then? Because everybody loves those.
The Duck books?
The Carl Barks stuff.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know when those ran. But, I thought that was kind of funny, because when I was reading it, because I'm like, well, that seems pretty narrow-minded for a guy that's talking about artwork of the people. But then again, you know.
He was also a snob.
They didn't even really have, like, you know, you couldn't do things except crunch numbers on computers back then and stuff. For what? I mean, there were computers in the 40s, right? Giant room-sized vacuum tube things.
In the 40s?
Yeah. I guess technically the
code... When was a computer then?
The code-breaking machines were computers, technically, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they at least had those in the 40s.
Yeah. It's weird to call those computers.
But, I mean, that's what they were, isn't it?
Well, I mean, before they were computers, computers were literally the people that did the calculations, right? The computer was a person with a slide.
Someone who computes. I mean, I guess from a very primitive standpoint, you'd consider an abacus computer, right?
Like, if you read those old DOC Not Mark.
Doc Savage?
No, the Wednesday books.
Who?
The Wednesday? So, Doc. Anyways, and like in all that old pulp sci-fi, when they talk about computers, they're not talking about like a machine on the ship. They're talking about like a group of engineers that are stationed on the ship that are running these calculations.
Hello, computer.
Oh, computer.
Anyway, though. I was also reading, I've been reading a book about Richard Matheson's screen work.
Okay.
Doc Smith.
Oh, E.E. Doc Smith?
E. Doc Smith, yeah.
Yeah, the Lensman stuff and that.
Yeah, that's
yes.
What he said. Well, he's kind of background. I'm only catching every few words. But yeah, I knew Richard Matheson had done a lot of screen work, but man, I didn't realize just how much.
Yeah?
That guy's all over the place. He did both of the William Shatner Twilight Zone episodes. Which I guess shows you just how little I paid attention to the credits in Twilight Zone. And, of course, you know, I mean, his story, I Am Legend, has been done a couple times.
I Am Legend.
And, trying to think he's done... Oh, he did the script for Duel, that Spielberg's TV movie with the truck and the... I can't remember the lead's name, but...
Duel, Dennis...
Weaver?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But, the weird thing about this book is, though, is that he gets quoted a lot in it from interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I'm saying, you know, dude shouldn't have opinion about stuff based on his work, but man, he's a negative motherfucker.
Like, oh, what do you mean?
9 times out of 10, when they go to pull a quote from him, it's like, oh, they butchered it, or it's mangled, or it's terrible, or like.
Oh.
I'm like, really? I mean, come on. Do you have to, like, express yourself in those terms consistently every time? Just say, it's what I was going to do, you know, or whatever. Like, but,
Some people be like that.
Yeah, you would just think, though, that, because the author is apparently a friend of his. Well, maybe, I guess, being a friend of his, he just takes it for granted that that's the guy's personality. I can relate.
Yeah.
But, you would figure, the book being written by someone that's friends with him, like, it's not doing him any favors to quote him verbatim on all this stuff. Like, time after time.
Yeah.
But still, in all, it's kind of interesting getting some of the background on some of these. Like, because, you know, he scripted, like, a lot of those AIP movies based on Edgar Allan Poe stories with Vincent Price in them and stuff. Mm. Monster movies like that for them. And I'm trying to think. There was some other stuff that I know I've seen before. I just didn't realize he was the scriptwriter for it. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's called Richard Matheson on Film, I think. Oh, he did the first two Kolchak TV movies, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I heard he wrote the Britney Spears Crossroads.
Yeah. I'll go with you on that, sure.
You don't believe me?
I haven't gotten that part of the book yet.
Mm.
So I don't know. But yeah, so yeah, he's just really prolific writer. A couple of years ago, I read a bunch of his stuff, some of it for the first time. But I read it all like in a big block over the course of a month or so.
I seem to remember you talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a good writer. Interesting concepts, interesting stories, stuff that given the time he wrote it, I think he was probably really original. Because, I mean, there are concepts that you've seen done a lot since, but when he did them, if they'd been done at all, it wasn't very much.
Mm-hmm.
So, innovative, I guess you'd call him.
Innovator, a pioneer.
A pioneer of the field. Yeah. So that's cool. I watched a short film Jim Terry made the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Which one? I guess I watched it yesterday. I don't know. He sent me a link to it. It was called The Boyfriend.
Oh, I don't remember. He's made like 50 of them.
Was it the Boy Fiend?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I just read it as boyfriend in my head.
I've seen like 12 of them, but he's made like 70. So I don't know which ones I've seen.
That wasn't very fun. I liked the fight scene.
So I guess you'd say he's prolific.
He was prolific, yes.
Yeah, I don't know when these were made. This one was just uploaded to YouTube, like, recently.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was shot on, like, a cam? Video cam?
Yeah, it was.
But I don't know if that was, like, post-processing for an actual...
I'm making a new one right now.
Are you going to be in it?
No.
No. Oh. Let's make movies.
Look... I don't know what it is for people around here that, like, let's make movies.
You don't want to make movies?
No, I don't want to make movies.
Okay.
You can give me money and make a movie based on something of mine. But I don't want to go and spend my weekends making a movie.
Hmm.
It's not fun for me.
Okay. Well then. So what have you been up to the past couple of weeks?
Just working. Being sugary.
Being sugary. Have you noticed more mosquito bites lately?
No, but I don't go outside a lot.
Do the bees hang around?
Bees don't hang around. I told you about the time that I got stung by a bee outside of bowling alley, and I went inside and something, and a whole guy just cut open a cigarette and put it on my bee sting.
No, but I've heard of that, using tobacco for that before.
Yeah.
It's supposed to draw out the poison or something?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Which probably it just numbs it, I'm guessing.
I don't remember it doing anything.
Huh.
I do remember it hurting, though.
Except making you want to have a cigarette.
No, not me.
Hmm.
I think I was like 14.
Oh, I started smoking when I was 13.
Well, stop bragging. It's not a cool thing.
I'm not bragging. And I don't care if it's cool. I don't smoke for you, Mike.
It sounds like you do.
Jeez. Next thing you're going to be telling me I'm prettier when I smile.
You're never pretty.
That's true, especially when I smile.
It is never pretty to look at you.
I am definitely someone who does not look better with a smile on their face.
You remember when you walked up to my house and I didn't notice it was you? When you came here for the convention and you just walked up to the gate and I was looking right at you and I didn't even notice it was you.
I had my bags with me and everything.
I know!
I thought that, I mean, you would think that would be a clue.
I was like, who is this? I don't know what happened to that.
Was that when I had the Frank Zappa thing going on?
What's the Frank Zappa thing? Not bathing?
No, the mustache and the sideburns and the little thing under my bottom lip.
No, you were clean shaven.
Oh, okay. Because, I could see, I didn't understand if the beard threw you off, or the facial hair threw you off.
It was kind of embarrassing, because I was like, whoa, he could have just fucking killed me or something.
Well, not yet. That wasn't the plan. Anyway. So, well, do we have any email?
Is it that time already?
Getting on. I figure it's good a time to ask as any. Okay. In the meantime, I'm going to talk about... I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I watched,
How are you doing?
I watched an anime recently that I was kind of...
They've all been anime crazy in here lately.
This one, I'm just kind of... I don't know. I'm on a fence about it, because on the one hand, it was funny, and it was sort of a different take on a subject. But at the same time, it was just so over the top, like, not good in other ways.
What was it?
It's called My Girlfriend is Show Bitch.
Show Bitch?
Which is a portmanteau of shoujo and bitch.
Oh.
So right off the bat, the title is like kind of, huh.
Sounds like trash. That's awesome.
Yeah, right off the bat, the title is already kind of like, huh? I was like, you know, it's there on Amazon. I'll check it out. And where I say it kind of takes a different twist on it is a lot of times with, like, harem shows or, you know, shows where, like, mostly harem shows, I guess. But, you know, the lead guy is, like, all about it and stuff, you know? And this one, this guy, okay, it's a high school thing, and this kid finally works up the nerve to ask the class president out. And so he asks her to be his girlfriend, not expecting her to actually say yes, but she does. And then they start dating, and she's weirdly intense and, like, inappropriately sexual, even though she's never had sex. Like she studied it in a school book and decided that this is the over the top way is the way to go with it. And he's kind of like, no, hey, no, whoa, calm down. You know? So it kind of puts a little bit of a reversal on the pervert angle of this type of show. But
I mean, that's pretty common.
And then you find out that she actually, it's a trait she had inherited from her mother, and her husband's kind of like the younger lead, you know, personality-wise. So it's like kind of a repeating thing, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of its moments where it's kind of sweet and sentimental, but overall it's also just, yeah, I don't know. Can't say I recommend it, but it was sort of interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very long, which helps. So, but yeah, so there you go. Watched a rom-com with Shelley Long.
Watched a rom-com with Shelley Long.
Yeah. Oh, and I finally got around to watching that movie they made about Joy Division back in like 2006 or 5. That Control movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen that still. That's real dumb on my part.
I don't know why I'd never gotten around to watching it either, because I really like Joy Division, you know, so. It was interesting. It's not too much of, like, usually in these kinds of movies, you expect them to maybe take a really overly sympathetic look at the person who dies.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's not like an attack film, it's not like sheltering him either, which I thought was interesting. Because, I mean, just besides the epilepsy and the depression, I mean, he kind of did some stupid things too, where he was kind of a jerk. And that kind of surprised me that they threw that in there, so. And also another movie I'd never seen that's been out for a long time is The Dangerous Lives of Ultra Boys.
I've heard of it.
It was like 2000, 2001 or something like that. I guess I'd never read the source, but I think this was based on the comic too. The autobio comic. Or semi-autobio comic, I think it read. So it gets recommended alongside stuff like Ghost World, stuff like that.
Makes sense.
And it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. And then the other thing was there was a 2006 documentary on thrash metal called Get Thrashed. The story.
I'm not going to get thrashed.
The story of thrash metal, and it was actually produced by the original drummer of Overkill, Rat Skates. Which I don't know. I don't actually know what Ratskate's real name is. I'm sure I've heard it before.
I don't think it's his real name.
It could be his real name. But. That one wasn't bad either. It was kind of nice overview of stuff. I'd like to see an updated version because, again, this was like 2000... I think it was 2006 was when it was originally released. So it was, you know, all the materials predates that, like interviews and things like that. But it did have a lot of interviews with different band members and touched on a bunch of different subjects. Or subjects in the field, I mean, but, you know, in the realm of thrash. But considering, at the time, thrash was having a little bit of a renaissance, I kind of like to see an updated version that sort of touches on where thrash is now.
Don't you mean a thrash-a-sance?
I'll thrash you. How about that?
You, shit, I'll come over to that house and I'll rip that ass.
I'll thrash you within inches of your life.
I will kick that ass.
Thrash.
I will thrash that ass.
I like the way you're saying that ass. You're saying uncomfortable.
Oh, jeez.
Thrash that ass.
Our sexual HR, we need it.
It's gone.
Fucking find a house.
You got rid of your HR?
Sean is buying a house right now.
Oh, is Sean HR?
He's sexual HR.
That's right, he is.
You guys are okay with that?
What's
that? Hey, Lisa. I don't feel like you guys are consistent.
Oh, so where's Sean buying a house at?
Out in Portage Park.
I don't know if I was ever in Portage Park.
West. I'm sure you've been there. Or you've been through there.
Was that where Sam and Liz moved?
No, they're in... Where the fuck are they? Hermosa, maybe?
Oh, okay. I thought that was California. Never mind.
I've never lived you.
Yes, you have. You just don't right now. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good on them. Homeownership is a solid step forward.
Solid step forward? Wait a minute. You make it sound like there's something wrong with them.
Oh, no.
It's on the recovery path.
I just meant it's like, you know, to fulfilling the American dream.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you're supposed to do to become an adult.
That's what he was saying when he left.
Was like Frank was saying, I'm glad he's finally got his shit together.
Yeah, that's what it does sound like.
Oh, well, no, that's not what I meant. I'm glad he has his shit together, but that's not what I meant.
I don't know if he does.
I know his art shit's been, like, on fire lately.
Yep.
So he seems to really have that together. But yeah.
He's still a little weirdo.
Say what?
He's still a little weirdo.
Well, I'm sure if he was here, he'd argue with you about that.
I don't think he doesn't even argue as much as he used to. He's not the contrarian that he used to be.
Contrary pants?
What?
Contrary pants?
He's not anymore.
Hmm.
We mostly worry about that with Josh now.
Well, okay, that makes sense then. Sean feels like the burden isn't only on him now, so he can let go of some of it.
Yeah. Six more pages left to draw about this issue.
One final movie thing, which is just a little bit of trivia here for you. So, one of the more memorable scenes of the MASH series was an episode where they were trying to watch a movie and the projector kept getting messed up, so they'd have to stop and people would sing songs or whatever in between while the projector was getting fixed. One of those skits was Radar doing impressions of people. And one of the impressions that he did was of John Wayne in the movie McClintock.
Okay.
He's going on about a thing like, I'm not going to hit you. I'm not going to hit you. Like hell, I'm not. You know, like that. That is one of the scenes I remember from MASH fairly well. I was watching McClintock the other day, because I think I've seen that movie. But I don't, it's been so long I didn't really remember it, so I decided to watch it, because it's got like Maureen O'Hara and stuff in it too, you know?
Oh, they were in more than one movie together.
Yeah, it's also got a Von DiCarlo in it. And a really young Stephanie Powers.
Really? I don't know.
Plus some various other like character actors you'd recognize if you've seen movies from that period and stuff, movies and TV.
That's okay, Mrs. H.
But, yeah, which is weird because I didn't realize she was that old because I remember her from Heart to Heart and she always seemed really young in that, you know? And that was a good lots of years later because I think McClintock was 63. Now, here's where the bit of trivia is, though. the war that MASH is supposed to take place in is the Korean War, which ended in, what, 54? I think.
I don't know.
So it ended almost 10 years before McClintock was, put out.
Whoa!
So that was an anachronism in MASH for Radar to have been doing that impression. I know. Mind blown, right?
Shit. I mean, in the later seasons, they clearly... If it was the veil of it not being Vietnam started to collapse pretty significantly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I always wondered when I watched those shows like that, why nobody had a military haircut.
Well, good point. I mean, some people did, but yeah, you're right.
In the movie, they all look like goddamn hippies.
Well, they were a surgical hospital. Maybe they were had relaxed rules. Well, that was part of the thing, too, is they kind of flouted the rules.
They did.
So they might all had relaxed haircuts because they were, you know. And again, I mean, it wasn't, I don't think MASH, even the original movie or the book that preceded it, I think it was a book first, right?
Yep. You only have a super, super strict haircut once you get out, there's a wider range of
it. I don't know. I've never seen a soldier book at all. But of course, this is, I would assume it to be even stricter back in the 50s.
Well, back in the 50s, what we consider a strict haircut was fairly normal, too.
Yeah, that's true.
It also went straight to the
I think, though, even the book and the movie, going back to the source material for that stuff, like, yeah, it wasn't supposed to be a historical drama. I mean, they said it was set in Korean War, but, I mean, it was supposed to be Vietnam, you know?
Sure.
And the current pictures of soldiers in Vietnam, you saw a lot of them with pretty lax uniform standards. They weren't all, like, spit polish and stuff. And buzz cuts. And clean shaven faces. But, yeah, anyway. So, did we have email?
No, sorry.
Okay. I just didn't know if I should stop talking or not.
You should never stop talking.
Well, that's not very nice, Mike.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
You should be a little more nice.
I'm sorry.
I mean, just on principle.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Mike.
I'm sorry.
You're prettier when you smile.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm sorry.
What was in stores last week?
I'm sorry.
Do we know?
I'm sorry.
Because I don't really remember.
Sorry, but I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. You all right there, buddy?
No.
I mean, you know. Anyway. I can read this week what's in stores. But I don't actually know what was out last week. Unfortunately. I want to say it was probably something pretty good. There was good stuff out last week. You should have been there.
No, I can't read.
Sure you can. Read those comics, Mike. Read them. I wish I could remember. There was something I saw that was coming out. This is something I saw that was coming out a while, but it was a collection of stuff, and I can't remember what the hell it was for, but it looked interesting. It was like a reprint collection of old stuff.
Old stuff. Star. All right.
And I am completely blanking on what it was, except for that vague, super unuseful, vague description. Did I tell you about the documentary on the Claremont X-Men years?
Documentary? Yeah, I think so.
I know I told you I'd watched one about D&D.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, after that, I'd watched one about the Claremont X-Men years, and that one was actually pretty good. It had a lot of interviews with people who were working in Marvel currently at the time and stuff.
Where is that?
On Amazon. I think it's called the Claremont Ears.
Oh, you know what? I saw that come up on my Apple TV, and I did not watch it. That's weird. Why did I not watch it?
I don't know.
I'm stupid.
And I haven't watched it yet, but I want to say there's a Steve Rude documentary on there, too.
Oh, Rude Dude?
That's his production company, right?
I think that's the name of the documentary.
I want to see. I can't remember. Yeah, you're right. It is. But it's not on Prime right now. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it was on Prime and I just didn't get around to watching it before it went back off or something. And that's why I haven't seen it yet. Could be. I don't know. But yeah, it is called Rude Dude and that's on there. If you want to pay for it. The Steve Rude Story. Heck of an artist, that's Steve Rude.
Steve Rude stories already.
Say what?
I've heard a lot of Steve Rude stories already.
Heck of an artist, though.
Unparalleled, you could say.
Mm. And, anyway, so. Yeah, I'm still kind of scrolling through stuff that's out this week, but. Trying to get to something, anything. I'll even talk about something that just looks interesting.
I don't care, I'm crazy.
It doesn't even have to be by us. I mean, there's plenty of interesting stuff. It's just I'm so out of touch with current published comics that I'm like, I'm not sure what half of this stuff is, or who it's by. And I'd be willing to bet that there's probably people I know working on stuff that I just don't recognize the title of. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
Because, well, like this, I do know this. Scotty's book, the Me You Love in the Dark. Was that Scotty?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so issue 2 of that's out this week. Alongside of a number one reprint. But, which, cool, it means it's sold enough, well enough to do reprints. It's always a good thing. Or bad thing if it means that the retailers just didn't order it, right? That means they weren't gauging their buying public well. Silly retailers. Oh, weird. Okay, so speaking of Kolchak, which I was, by talking about Richard Matheson.
No, you actually specifically mentioned Kolchak.
Oh, yeah, I was, by way of Matheson. That's why I was talking about him. Moonstone has a Kolchak and the Night Stalkers, the Faceless God prose novel in stores this week.
Who wrote it?
Don't know. Could be Rice, the guy that... Oh, no, it's not. James Chambers and Glenn Ostrander.
I wonder if he's related to John Ostrander.
I don't know.
Is that a common name?
Not around here, but I come from a place where it's a lot of German names, so it wouldn't necessarily be.
Germany?
No, Mount Healthy.
Mount Healthy, Germany?
It is weird. That's something I probably should talk about at some point, is just growing up here and lots of really strange names.
Is Crank a German name?
No, I thought so when I was a kid. Turns out it's a shortening of a Irish name, I think.
Wait a minute, what? It's a shortening? Shortening of what? What's the real name?
I think McCranken?
McCranken?
Could be McCranken.
McCranken?
McCranken.
Oh, man. We're changing the McCranken.
Crank, you have to admit that sounds like in an episode of a cartoon where the main character is like telling the story about how his family came from Ireland and they make up the most ridiculous name.
Oh, you want me to release the McCranken?
McCranken. Oh.
I think I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Family history has always been pretty muddled.
Yeah. I mean, my dad told me I was Irish or whatever and all kinds of things.
From what I'm gathering, our family was Scott Irish and they were nomadic, what do you call those, like mercenaries, barbarians, whatever, you know? And they pretty much went across Europe looting and pillaging.
Here's the thing. The reason I find that so funny is that there is records going that far back that you know they were mercenaries. It's like they'll go down to the McCrankens. They're mercenaries. Yeah. And they live down the street.
Looting and pillaging, and then they came to the Americas and were, you know, horse thieves and cattle rustlers and stuff, and, you know.
Demanding to know what's in everybody's wallet.
Yep.
And a lot of horse thieves.
Some. Moonshine runners.
Who was apparently a pirate.
They are a pirate.
I don't know anything other than general area of where I may have originated.
Yeah, and my information's probably completely misguided. I don't know.
I always tell everybody that I'm from Tennessee, so I may be part goat.
But you're from California.
But here's the thing. I can say I'm from Tennessee.
You grew up in Tennessee.
I grew up in Tennessee. I'm half Tennessean.
Is that right? Tennessean?
Yes, Tennessean.
Tennyson.
No, not Tennyson. Alfred Lord Tennessean.
Well, you know what they say, Mike? It's better to be Tennessean than not heard.
I like that.
So. Oh, this one relates to Addison. There's a barbaric number 2 black and white edition in stores this week.
I mean, it relates to me because black and white.
Yeah, I didn't think that went through.
Is it an issue that you originally colored, or did they just get out of paying you by doing a black and white issue?
It is the issue I originally colored, but they did cross my name off the credits.
That's funny.
Yeah, I didn't think that went through when I said it. So not only do they,
I am planning on doing some hand colored cover. Variant something with that
box. I'm getting paid to color a cover.
Yeah.
That they shouldn't have paid me.
Yeah.
It looks terrible.
Well, that's weird.
It's a weird year for that.
I wonder if somebody will pay me to color a cover.
Well, never underestimate the desperation of a comic book editor.
For the new series I'm working on, Rush, they have the designer here involved that did some design covers, variant covers for it.
Weird.
Pretty cool looking.
Cool.
She irrelevant. Or she. Or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. So they Chiarello'd it.
Chiarello.
Mark Chiarello, the designer at DC.
Right.
Art director.
You used to see his name in credits.
Mark Chiarello.
So, anyway, final words?
I love you, Craig.
Is that really the last thing you want to say?
Why not?
The last thing you want to say?
Well, I'm not dying, am I?
Aren't you?
Don't like this tone.
Sorry, I'm trying to work on new deliveries. All right, then. Well, you can reach us at crankcast.com, crankcast@gmail.com. Mike's website is ihatemike.com. You can go read BattlePug at battlepug.com. You can still also find BattlePug hardcovers in stores and things. And softcover collections. Not to mention Grumble. I believe you can still find collected versions of that in stores as well.
What?
Addison's at addisonduke.com. And, you know, Josh is hanging around somewhere. He's making music on SoundCloud. And, yeah, so have a good weekend, and we'll see you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.